Welcome to the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast, 50-point margin of victory edition. I'm joined by the great, some say mid, but I say great, Ian Boyd. Ian, you did something today that enraged me. Would you like to identify what that was?
I made a Star Wars reference in our text thread.
Well, I expect that from you. That doesn't enrage me at all.
I'm at a loss then.
You're warm. It was in our text thread.
I don't know.
All right. We were arranging a time, and you were describing your children doing their various battles and stuff and romping around. And you said, as soon as I get them to bed, I am, do you remember the word you used?
Ready?
Flex. I'm flex. As in short for flexible, is that what you intended?
Yeah.
And this is like your use of mid. You purposely did that to enrage me, in my opinion.
I use mid ironically. I use flex. I didn't realize that that was a no-go for you old Gen Xers.
You're the kind of guy who eats brunch and pronounces it to be delish at the end when you push back from the table. Have you ever done that?
It's possible.
Yeah. A guy who says flex, a guy who says mid, he would say something's delish.
I would do that ironically as well.
You would do that around me purposely because you know.
Well, now.
It's one of the few ways you can penetrate my powerful iron psychology, but you found the back door.
So you don't like,
congratulations.
You like your shortened words.
I don't like when you do that. It reminds me of being back in California.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it doesn't fit your Ypsilanti. how do you pronounce it?
Ypsilanti.
What? Say it.
Ypsilanti.
Ypsilanti. Okay. Hey, a Michigan player went there and gave out turkeys last week. Did you see that?
Yeah, actually, the last year when Blake Corum like tore his knee the week before the game, he was also in Ypsilanti handing out turkeys, and people were like, well, he's walking pretty good. Maybe he'll be able to play against Ohio State. And turns out that walking around giving out turkeys to underserved communities is not as difficult as dodging Buckeye tacklers in the hole.
If Blake Corum was a real football player, he would have taken a tendon from one of those turkeys and put it into his knee and played.
I don't know if Michigan's various strength program add-ons are quite that sophisticated.
All right. Well, I never put it past Harbaugh. He's probably figured it out.
I remember he used to accuse Pete Carroll of giving all the Seahawk players steroids. And as the late, great Jonathan Sharks once said, this is one of the best things he ever said, was projection is an amazing thing. People are out there telling on themselves all the time.
Yeah, it's true.
Maybe that's part of the Michigan strategy for success.
It's the girlfriend who just randomly, or boyfriend, if it applies to you, who just randomly accuses you of cheating out of the blue. And you're like, interesting. Perhaps you're telling me something about yourself. All right. Well, Texas told us something about itself and told Texas Tech a little something, which is don't write checks that you can't cash. And Texas Tech on Friday night couldn't get a payday loan, much less cash a check. Ian, what were your thoughts of the Longhorn romp that were not beautifully encapsulated in my postmortems? Anything to add?
Well, I don't know. I did read your postmortems. I don't know the extent to which you touched on this, but I thought Tech might give Texas a challenge because I just thought that they would play to the right type to give Texas trouble, just throwing the ball around and whatnot. And I think my biggest oversight going into the game was that I forgot that DKR is kind of a serious SEC level environment these days, at least for a big game. And Tech absolutely wilted playing on the road in that environment on Friday night.
Agreed. I think part of it too, and I thought it watching them, but I didn't realize it till I saw them in person. I didn't realize how slow Tech is. They're a slow football team. They're slow in the secondary. They're slow at receiver. And they're bigger than you think when you see them in person. You know, they're not tiny
Were
Tech.
You there?
Yeah, I was there. I was there. Yep. Such is my dedication, Ian. But yeah, that was, you know, it is interesting to, you know, you get a lot sometimes on TV that you actually miss in person, but vice versa. And one of the things that you'll see in person is you pretty much quickly get an assessment of the other team's speed relative to not just Texas's, but just other teams you've seen. And Tech was slow, noticeably slow. Slow receivers, slow DBs. I knew the DBs were slow because they're massive, right? It's the biggest secondary in the Big 12, maybe college football. But they're not fast. And in the modern game, which you've well documented in spread offenses, et cetera, if you can't run, it doesn't really matter how physical you are unless you're protected by a certain scheme.
The you highlighted it on that Jaden Blue run in your postmortem, and it was really apparent. I had written it before the game that Tech would drop their deep safety to Hutto and try to make tackles to force Texas to convert in the red zone, and they did exactly that. But Blue hit a crease, and that safety was like, just there's no prayer in the open field of catching Blue. And there was a few plays like that. The Worthy's punt returns were murdering them. Obviously Texas played a lot of press coverage in this game for a reason. Completely unafraid of Tech throwing the ball over the top. There are other places too, but
can we talk about the press coverage?
Can we?
Yeah. So, all right. It's our show, so let's do it. Did we run press coverage because Pete thought he could? Did we, because of the matchups, did we run press coverage because Sark got a little tired and fed up of hinting around that we need to cover better and be tighter? Sark has mentioned this multiple times, right, in press conferences. And he basically said, hey, this needs to change. Or is it some combination of the two? Or maybe even the third option, it could be a combination of this as well. Is this a new identity going forward that Texas will continue through the Big 12 title game, through the bowl game or playoff? Have we realized that we play better and it suits the style and the strengths of the defense better when we're more aggressive and challenge everything?
It should be the identity.
Yes.
I think both Pete Kwiatkowski and Terry Joseph have inclinations toward conservatism in their coverage alignments. They both use press coverage at their previous stops, but a lot of times it'll be like just one of the two corners doing it. And it won't be, it's not consistent, and it's not like their way of life, you know? You know what I noticed in this game in a major way? Gavin Holmes, the guy that was dominant at times at Wake Forest as a press corner, was revitalized playing press coverage against Texas Tech. And he was pushing the envelope and getting flags with his trash talk for how he was just shutting them down. Terrence Brooks, unquestionably better. Well, actually, I don't know if I would say that. He's pretty flex with a few different coverage alignments. He's pretty good. But obviously physicality and being able to use his length and his strength is really important to his game. He's not, whenever his day comes in the combine, I don't know if he's going to break 4.6, and he's definitely not going to break 4.5, right? You're thinking.
Yeah, I am. I think you nailed it. I think it plays to their strengths. And I think it helps cover up some of the deficiencies at safety. Because I think those guys actually feel more comfortable understanding that the short underneath stuff is sort of taken care of, or it should be challenged at least. And they don't have this fear of, I got to get up there. I got to disrupt this crossing route. I got to disrupt this stop route. I got to disrupt this throw behind the line of scrimmage that is going to go for 7 yards. If I'm not the guy, Johnny on the spot, I think it makes them a little more deliberative.
You might be right. That's the kind of thing that you can really only see live.
Honestly. Yeah. I mean, Taft played a really good game, not just the punt block, but
yeah,
he was on top of stuff in a good way. And we mixed it up some too. When we didn't just play press man,
right,
when we dropped into zones, the difference in disposition, and I've talked about this with you before, but it's not just the scheme you call, but it's what's your disposition in the scheme. Are you on your back foot or on your front foot? Right? You could play off coverage on third and four, but is all your weight on your front foot and you're sprinting downhill at the snap to disrupt that out route, that 5 yard out? Or are you actually taking two steps back at the snap of the ball? Right. In addition to the fact that you're already giving ground,
right,
everyone had their weight on their front foot in this game, no matter what the call was. And so I do think it's something that was suitable to Tech, obviously. Baron Morton averaged 2.4 yards per attempt, which I've not seen in a college football game in some time. But I also pulled up the stat. A bunch of Zach Kittley's offense happens behind the line of scrimmage. And it exploits the concessions that defenses have to make or think they have to make because they're worried about getting burned or beat over the top, right? And all these little 5 and 6 yard gains that Zach Kittley's offense expects led to 2nd and 10, 2nd and 11, 2nd and 9. They were 7 of 9 behind the line of scrimmage for 5 yards. We conceded nothing. And I got to tell you, the guy that led the charge on that, other than Gavin Holmes, which I think you nailed, was Jahdae Barron. He didn't have big wow plays in this game, but he just had several times where that initial throw, he snuffed it out, and then that guy had to bounce it, and then someone else came up in support, and it's 2nd and 11. And Tech is used to being in 2nd and 4, 2nd and 6 in that instance, and they hand the ball to Taj Brooks, right? It's their whole ball control, and I just think it was an example of Texas breaking tendency. You know, one of the things Texas fans lament is, hey, why don't we ever surprise them, right? Always feels like we're getting surprised by their adjustment. I can assure you we surprised Tech. They were not expecting that on defense at all. And I just thought it was a great execution of it. We're going to talk about this in another podcast, but I think what we did against Tech is almost exactly duplicable to Oklahoma State.
I mean, they're very similar teams.
Yes.
Do you remember Dead Fisher?
I do. Great guy. Great Red Raider.
Yeah, I remember him.
From the old Barking Carnival days, for those of you who don't know who that is.
He covered Tech for Barking Carnival.
Yes. Hilarious. Great guy.
He had his own Tech blog at one point during their vaunted 2008 season. And he noted that in the 2008 game, he was kind of like, you know, Longhorns, you shouldn't feel so bad. A lot of these screens that this offense is used to picking up 5 to 10 yards on were like 3 to 5 yards against Texas. Like the DBs were unbelievable. Earl Thomas and just the way they played off blocks. They took away, I don't know, I just had a throwback to remembering that when you mentioned it.
Yeah.
It's like the same thing 15 years later.
I do remember him also trying to mount the defense to the ridiculous holding on Brian Arakpo through that whole game. And he was just like, it's just good physical football. We're like, all right, man, you know. the fan in him showed on that one, but great guy.
My favorite memory of that was Chris Applewhite just being enraged by the game and by Ted Fisher's comments. And he was like, he's like, you just so you know, Oklahoma is going to destroy you. And Tech didn't believe it. And Chris Applewhite got the last laugh on that one. Cause I'll never forget that Oklahoma Tech game. Let's move on.
Let's move on. Offensively, I observed in person and also observed statistically after when I kind of looked it up to verify what I thought I saw. Quinn Ewers, very good on RPOs. Ian, you were very early on this, pointing out that there's two Quinn Ewers. There's RPO and also more traditional play action, because I think people use RPO and play action interchangeably, and I don't. I call play action
protection.
It's an all-inclusive term, but RPO has a true option involved, right? It's in the name. You can hand it off or throw it, depending on your read. Called play action, there is no option to hand the ball off. You're just faking it on the run. At least that's how I define it in my little world.
Yeah. I think probably a good delineator is RPOs, your line is run blocking.
Yes.
Play action, they may feign run blocking, but they're actually...
they got a pass block.
They're protected.
And...
enormous difference.
Also much more likely to see a max protect.
Yeah.
In a play action. There's not really a lot of max protect RPO, right?
Min protect.
Yes. You want to min protect RPO. You want to spread everything out and give a good clean sight line. So, Ian, I got to credit you. You were very early on this that there's two Quins. There is play action and RPO Quin, where crew he cut. Really – crew cut Quin. He really excels. And then there's sloppy Quin, simple Quin, sometimes you and I call him. And that's the more traditional play act, more traditional drop back, right? In this game, a pretty significant disconnect. He was 3 of 9 for 26 yards on straight drop back passes. RPOs, he averaged over 10 yards per attempt.
This is the thing. This is the thing with him. You know, when Nash knows Texas, God bless him, filmed Texas's open practice in 2022. And I watched all the 7-on-7s with Quinn Ewers and Hudson Card. And I watched it and I was like, wait, this is Hudson Card, right? Okay. And this is Quinn Ewers. And then I started texting everybody. I was like, guys, Quinn Ewers is a disaster in this dropback stuff. He has no idea what he's doing yet. Hudson Card is miles better at him than this right now. And then I was kind of shocked when they made Quinn Ewers the starter, honestly, after seeing that. He's way better, Quinn Ewers. He's a good quarterback now. He was probably, unless he had a month to prepare for the opponent, he was probably a below average quarterback last year. This year, he's, I think, a consistently good quarterback every week in this system with these players. But the dropback game is so bad. It's bad, and it's worse because he's hurt and you can tell he's protecting himself, which I don't know. I think he's doing the right thing, honestly.
Oh yeah, he is.
He's playing smart, which I like, and he's protecting himself, which he was not doing well enough earlier, but it is what it is. He's a disaster at dropping back and going through progressions.
And I think that's the key, the RPO and the play action. There are at most two reads, and they're typically linear, meaning shallow, deep,
half field,
or half field, left, farther left, right, farther right. When he drops back in a true drop back, it's 3rd and 9, right? He's having to read the defy and maybe go through some progressions, and that's where things tail off. I think added to that, you mentioned the injury. That's right. One way to protect yourself when you're injured is to throw the ball away. Or throw it to the first open receiver. Don't bypass him, even if it's a 6-yard gain.
He's one of the most turnover-averse quarterbacks I've ever seen. Especially after that double slant pick against Oklahoma to open the Red River shootout. Like, he was already turnover-averse, and then once that happened, it was like, I'm never going to throw another pick as long as I... And so you can see him. You can see him double clutch and eat it and then take a sack routinely now.
Yeah, I think he is what he is. And game manager is often thrown around as an insult. High-level game manager can win a national championship.
Especially if you can hit the throws that he can hit.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So... I don't mean that. And also, by the way, I think there is an element of whether he's feeling it as well and just sort of seeing the field. Because in the Tech game, we threw early, and we threw early on early downs. We played Canadian football, right? We were trying to stay out of third down. And we threw on early downs. We were throwing RPOs on first down, and he was connecting. And that's what allowed, I think, the running game to find some air a little later. And then it just dominated. It took over.
They quit.
They quit too, as well. But I thought he looked good in that. I thought he threw the ball well. I thought he was decisive. He fit it in some tight spots that I don't know that the TV angle maybe always showed. And so that was good. But then you saw the limits of what he was going to accomplish on some of the dropback stuff. And so Sark said, oh, okay. And then he sort of dialed it back appropriately. And then we started running the ball. Didn't hurt that the defense and special teams utterly dominated, right? If you want to create margin. But there are other games where when Quinn is seeing it and feeling it pretty well, we dial it up. And we start to put more on his plate. And we'll turn the game over more to him. And I think Sark sort of senses that organically as the game progresses.
The smartest thing I said all year.
That's a great way to start a sentence.
Is that Quinn Ewers is in this offense. The way this offense works, Sark can dial up, especially with the skill talent he has this year in the run game. He can dial up a million one read throws.
Yes.
But you need a veteran quarterback. This is kind of the trick of college football right now. These coordinators are really good, especially Sark and the higher-end guys, Ryan Day, Cliff Kingsbury, Lincoln Riley. They can draw up a million ways to get a one-read throw and just dice defenses up. But they need a veteran quarterback that can handle a high volume of one-read plays. So it's like... there's got to be a good comp for this. That's maybe you can interrupt if you think of one. It's not like mastering a one read throw is like a mastering a very simple language. And then you can duplicate it, you know, a million times. But you don't need the same level of processing speed, like mentally as a quarterback, to make like a, you see what I'm saying?
Is this pig Latin versus actual Latin?
Yeah. Yeah. if you learn pig Latin, you can learn like a million different variations with time, with enough time. But you may or may not ever be able to actually learn and apply real Latin. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
There's probably a better example, but I don't know. I mean, this is a problem the NFL is having now, and it makes it really hard to evaluate these quarterbacks, is that they're taught more often than not now, the better offensive coordinators are teaching them a million one-read plays rather than how to do like a full field progression or a real drop-back game.
Yeah, it's part of a conversation Randy and I had about the joysticking.
Yes.
Of football players, and the ultimate way to handle complexity is to actually teach the game.
Did y'all have this guy? Me and you had this conversation on the
podcast. We have, and we had it with Todd Orlando, right? Particularly because it was clear that he was joysticking to the exclusion of teaching his guys football. And it showed up, right? And the Dana Holgersons of the world could find our little tricks, and you got into call matching games and electronic battleship that we always lost. So I think there's an element of that to quarterback play. And I think Sark wants to teach the game of football completely. But when the student is ready, the master will arrive, right? Yeah, and I think he holds back some things because he knows he'll just complicate sight pictures and understanding.
I think Sark and Venables are actually both alike in that regard. Like, I think Venables teaches his defenders real football. But then he also steals signs and tries to call match.
Yeah.
But when he does it, it's within a system that's designed, Gary Patterson too. It's within a system that actually teaches guys how to play their position. And I don't know. Yeah. Very, very similar.
One thing I got to call out. So Sark, it's funny. You always think of offensive creativity, and we always, fans equate it to the passing game. But the fact is you can scheme the running game. And I thought Texas, first of all, was incredibly successful running the ball, not just in volume, 302 yards. But if you take away the quarterback carries or sacks, Texas running backs averaged 8.6 yards per carry. And a little kitchen efficacy test that I like to do that's easy, that doesn't require very advanced metrics, is take the 1 to 3 most explosive runs and throw them out. And then tell me your per carry average. If it's over 4, 4.5, good. You're in good shape. Throw out Texas's 69-yard run by Blue, a 24-yard run by Red, and a 21-yard run by Wisner late in the game, and Texas still averaged 5.9 yards per carry. So the dream of the running game is, not only can I get explosives doing the most conservative thing you can do, but I also get consistency.
Yeah.
Because it's great to drop an 80-yard run on someone, but if your next 17 runs go for 44 yards, I understand your average says 18 for 124, and that's a great box score. But the fact is you punted a lot too, didn't you? So I thought that was exciting. And the thing that opened it up, one, the offensive line kicked Tech's ass. Two, those 69-yard type runs that will help your average were created because Tech's slow. Three, we had awesome misdirection in our running game. And it was sneaky because it really exploited a lot of Tech's little cheat codes on defense of moving down linemen right before the snap, even on rundowns, and trying to create negative plays. No negative plays inflicted on any rundowns against Texas. And some of those stunts, getting caught in them, is what created consistent gains for Texas. So I highlighted this one in the postmortem. You probably noticed it too. 21 personnel. We ran a little cross buck action, if you're an old school coach and you want to describe it that way. But it was basically mid zone blocking in one direction.
What zone?
Mid zone, which is what it kind of I call zone blocking, but without a particular inside or outside predilection, meaning you're running to first daylight. And so
I thought it was a zone play that was like not that good.
Yeah, mid, exactly. It's a flex zone. It's a flex zone, Ian. You can do whatever you want with it. But
D-gap zone.
Yeah.
It's not outside, so, it's not downhill.
Some people call it mid zone. At least that's what I've heard it called. So I don't know. Yeah. But the cross action in the backfield and Jatavion Sanders pulling on a counter suggested the ball was going one way. The blocking went the other way. And we hand it to Blue crossing, right, on a crosser action. And Blue did a phenomenal job of realizing, I need to get this tight inside fast because that's where the gap is. But Tech's linebackers could not find the ball. And they were cheating because they were looking in the backfield instead of looking at the run blocking in front of them. And their linebackers sucked, by the way. So
it turns out.
Yeah, it's, as it turns out. So anyway, I thought that was really interesting. I thought it was really creative. And it was a way to combat some of the things that Tech used last year as sort of a cheat on our inexperienced offensive line, inexperienced quarterback, lack of, I'd say, variety in our running game. And I think we did a really good job of scheming up the running game. I could have just said that and not even given the example, but I had to carry on. Thoughts?
I agree. I thought the Iowa State game was kind of Sark and Flood's magnum opus for scheming the run game. Like, Iowa State was obviously concerned about the passing game, but that is a very physical, tough run defense. Playing in Ames in cold weather. And Sark was dialing it up where, so long as Baxter had a reasonably good read and ran hard, it was like 4 to 5 yards guaranteed.
Yes.
Because of the angles he was creating, because of the matchups he was creating.
Turns out Iowa State and Kansas State, not great run defenses in snow.
You know what? That's a fair point.
Yeah. I think that was a traction issue. But there's a guy I listen to. I wish I could credit him. I think he goes by Stucky. He has a betting podcast. And he looks for, you're going to laugh at this, but it's true. He looks for snow games in November where you don't have the accompanying negative conditions that snow suggests. Meaning, there's a blanket of snow on the field, but there's no whipping winds and there's no like moisture in the air or rain falling. And he calls them snowver games, snow over. And he says Vegas, when they see snow, automatically drops the total, the point total for both teams. And he's like, I immediately bet the over because what happened in Iowa State, Kansas State is what happens. You will identify your runner or receiver who can run in traction on snow. And that guy is going to have a career day. And that's what Iowa State did. That freshman running back ran for like 250.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hilarious. Snover. Add that to your lexicon.
I noted when I was younger that the passing game can be dominant in a cold, like mud ball kind of game.
100%.
Because what's hard is traveling on the ground. If your quarterback has strong enough hands and that the ball can still travel the way he intends it to in the air, then once you hit a receiver down the field on a crease, no one can catch it because they can't run because they're running in mud.
Yes. The enemy of the passing game and offense in general, wind. Wind and then accompanying moisture, right? Like real rain, not a little drizzle.
Even but, that depends on the quarterbacks. I mean, this is what NFL guys get all hung up on with hand size.
Well, yeah, but that's the point of the wind. So moisture by itself, not a precondition for destroying your offense, right? For your point, that you know, the mud, right? You know where you're going, the defender doesn't. But wind defeats all offense. And then you add wind with rain, and then it gets real bad.
Cold matters too.
Cold matters if it's super cold. But if it's cold and still, it's actually great for the passing game.
I'm not ashamed to admit that I played quarterback with my friends in like one of the very few snowstorms that Austin had in the early 2000s. And we're playing out in the snow and I could not grip the football to save my life.
Yeah.
And I'm like 5'8". I don't know what my hand size is, but it's not something that the NFL would be excited about. I'm sure of that at least. And it was miserable. I was like, I was trying to like sort of shot put it.
Yeah.
Create some space. It would go anywhere near where I wanted it to.
Yeah. Well, here's a guy that functions well in all conditions. His name's Gabe Winslow, mortgage broker par excellence. And he's more down to earth than the French that I just used. But nonetheless, I wanted to try to class him up a little bit. Give Gabe a call at 832-557-1095. Interest rates, creeping down, starting to get a little more beneficent environment out there for buying houses. So if you guys are in the market this winter or even into the next spring, get your ducks in a row, get pre-qualified, talk to Gabe and come up with a strategy now, because he is a guy who has amazing antenna for the market. He kind of understands where it's going to go, what's going to happen and when. And his timing, I know for a fact, has saved a bunch of our listeners thousands of dollars and a lot of heartache. Give him a call, 832-557-1095. And when winter is coming, Ian, you need to decide whether you're an ant or a grasshopper. When the weather was good, did you store up food or did you play all day? We live in a society of grasshoppers for the most part. But those of us who are ants would do well to talk to David McClellan. He is a fiduciary financial advisor from Foreign Financial, a partner in that organization, extensive background for elite financial organizations. Now he helps you manage your money and build wealth. He is the guy that's going to help you to be the best aunt you can be. A-N-T, not A-U-N-T, but if you're a woman and you want to be a better aunt to your nieces and nephews, you could also call David. He probably has good advice. He's a good guy. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. He'll set up an easy free consultation. You're not going to be added to some weird email list. He's not. David's got better things to do, which is managing wealth for successful people. But he will see if you're a fit for him as much as you'll assess whether you're a fit for him or he's a fit for you. So give him a call, 312-933-8823. And then finally, if you need a house in Centex, call Laura Baker, 512-784-0505. She's really good at what she does. And real estate, like so many other professions, including quarterbacking, is about repetitions. You don't want to start a quarterback who throws one or two balls a year and you roll them out there in a game and say, go get them. You want to start the quarterback who's throwing all the time and honing their craft. That's why you want to get a top 10% realtor. That's what Laura Baker is. You can reach her. It's 512-784-0505. All right. Anything else we want to hit on that tech game, or can we talk about A&M coaching?
Let's talk about A&M.
Let's do it. So a little segue, you mentioned teaching the game and not just making calls. One thing that I can offer in praise of Mike Elko that was particularly evident at Duke this year is that he is a guy who's clearly teaching the game of football and not just making a bunch of calls on defense. You could see that in how Duke played. You could see that in how they ordered the importance of how to defend certain downs and distances. And he's an interesting defensive coordinator because he sort of makes these big, smart, but somewhat intuitive jumps between aggression, all out aggression, and bend but don't break. And he seems to have a good feel for it. That said, he's not going to be the defensive coordinator at Texas A&M. He's going to be the head coach. Yeah, Ian's saying, is he though? Yeah, actually, he's going to be the head coach. He's going to hire a defensive coordinator. And yes, he'll be involved on the defensive side of the ball. But here's my praise for Mike Elko. I don't think he's like a, God help me, and I love Will Muschamp for what he did at Texas as a defensive coordinator. I don't think he's a Will Muschamp type defensive coordinator who views football solely through the prism of defense. I'm not going to say he's Bob Stoops, who's like the most progressive defensive coordinator who's ever lived, right? Let me go hire this maniac who can't even look me in the eyes during the job interview, Mike Leach, and hand him an offense. But I think he shades more towards realizing offense is important. It's not just about protecting his defense. We'll see when he's at A&M. What do you think?
Can I give a caveat?
Sure.
His Duke offense. So there's like a certain, I think he cares about offense and he wants his offense to be good, but what he wants them to be good at is ball control.
Yes.
And the Duke offense is oriented around running the ball efficiently and physically. And then their passing game is kind of drop back progression oriented. And then Riley Leonard makes something happen because college quarterbacks don't get past their first or second read often. As opposed to like a Sark or a Ryan Day, I'm going to scheme it up where the first read is open. And not only is it open, but it's open 30 yards down the field behind their defense. I don't think Elko is about that. And I think if you don't embrace that style and offense in today's college game, you're playing with one arm tied behind your back to some extent. It's like
point.
Let me soapbox this for just one more second.
Sure, bring it.
Back in the day was like I formation or whatever you could do to set up your dominant running back to dominate a game, right? Now it's how do you set up your one or two awesome receivers to dominate a game and guarantee that your receiver, that your quarterback's going to drop back, they're going to be the read, they're actually going to be open, and he's going to hit them on time. That's modern college football. And I don't think he plays that game. We'll see what, I mean, he hasn't at Duke. We'll see who he hires at offensive coordinator. He supposedly has a blank check to go hire anybody he wants.
So one thing I would say is don't assign the constraints of a job or an environment to the constraints of the coach necessarily. So he didn't have a receiver at Duke, literally does not have a receiver at Duke. Fair. Who is that guy? Yeah. Also, offensive line, better at run blocking than pass blocking. Thirdly, well, Riley, what?
That's a matter of emphasis, I think.
Maybe.
You can be really good at protecting on shot plays, or you can be really good at mauling people.
Like Texas. Third part, I would say Riley Leonard is actually an athlete playing quarterback right now.
Yeah.
The NFL likes him because of the tools, but he's more – people look at him and think he's Drake May. He's closer to Lamar Jackson in how he approaches the game. Obviously not that level of athlete, but actually a really good athlete. And, Josh Allen. Sorry?
Josh Allen. A little bit.
Yeah, Josh Allen. But just fast, physical. You can't get him on the ground. And yeah, as you said, his second read is takeoff running. So I don't actually know what Elko would want from his offensive coordinator if he has all the ingredients for an explosive offense and he's got real receivers and, you know, different sort of personnel. We'll see. My point is, I don't think he's actively antagonistic to offense.
I don't think he's antagonistic to offense, but I don't know. Have we ever seen him with a not ball control oriented offense?
No, because he coaches at Duke.
No, but he coached with Jimbo Fisher. This is a definite failing of Jimbo Fisher at A&M. And he coached at Notre Dame with Brian Kelly for like 1 year with who was the quarterback? Ian Book or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. If he goes and hires Cliff Kingsbury, then it'll be like, oh, okay. He's going to let it rip.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. One of the names I've heard floated around, one, he could retain the Duke offensive coordinator, or two, the Missouri guy.
Yeah.
Young dude, name escaping me at the moment.
Kirby Moore, I think.
Kirby Moore. He did a good job with Missouri.
Yes.
And I like how he schemes stuff up. Just did a good job all around. So, yeah, I think that'd be a good hire. My point is I don't think he's going to day one tell Kirby Moore, like, hey, don't turn the ball over. Don't put my defense in bad spots. We're going to win this, you know, defense wins championships. He doesn't strike me as that guy, but time will tell. We'll see.
I don't know. He definitely strikes me as that guy.
Interesting. Okay. Well,
I mean, I could be wrong. I haven't watched him closely, but
I've heard him talk, and I read a really interesting article. I got to find it. I'll send it to you. But it was about being a DC and understanding the tendencies of down and distance and field position and what he's expecting from the offense and how you can exploit their predictability but still guard against them doing something contrarian. And it was a really interesting article. I'll have to find it and send it to you. But he's a pretty thoughtful guy. I think he's a little sharper tool than maybe the average DC turned head coach.
I will say this for him. When he took over at A&M with Jimbo Fisher, I watched some of the early games, and I think I DM'd like String or like some Aggie, and I was like,
some Aggie. Just a random Aggie on the internet.
It was String. I don't know if you know who that is.
I know that is.
Okay. And I was like, this team is way better coached and more disciplined than I've seen in a while. Like, congratulations. Like, he immediately had that defense playing hard, physical, and disciplined. And then as we found out when he left, the whole thing kind of came undone. So I don't think it's a terrible hire. I don't know that Elko can take them where they want to go. For the Aggies, I know an Aggie that's like, he wants A&M to be physical, run the ball, be competitive, go 8-4, that's fine. Do it the Aggie way, be physical, don't bring shame to the university, you know? Go toe-to-toe in the SEC, and you'll win some and you'll lose some, and that's fine with me. More Aggies should have that mindset, honestly. And I think Elko would match that.
So you obviously see some constraints to the job, whereas other people just see the sleeping giant aspect.
Well, the constraints to the job that I see are that they don't have that mindset. I tell people all the time, like in Michigan, whenever I want to explain the Aggie ethos, I tell them your story from your dad about the back in the day going to the cadet school
military conferences
and the Aggies having the most ostentatious uniforms.
Yes.
And then always triggering a nuclear war in the exercises.
Yes.
And I was like, there's no better way. I've never heard a better way to explain what it is about A&M that makes them what they are and gives them a ceiling as a program than that. They're like, they would tell Lee to mount Pickett's charge again one more time.